Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
All right, good Tuesday morning. Amy Jacobson here in with John Anthony.
Hey.
Here for Dan Proft. Good morning. You're more chipper today, I see.
I got more energy.
Yeah, because last time I saw, oh, wait, is it Balance of Nature?
It's Balance of Nature.
Oh, and then we've got some 120 life back
I know. I sent him the video of my friend taking it and it dropping like 30.
Yeah, tell us what happened again. Your friend came into the studio, right?
Yeah, he was like 180 something over one something. It dropped down.
180 over one
something. And it dropped down to 150 right after he took the 120 life.
Really?
Yeah. It was pretty cool.
I took some the other day too.
Did it work?
Oh, well, you know, I just thought, you know what? I'm low on energy. I need some fluids over here because it's hot outside. So yesterday we had a live remote at Joe Cotton Ford.
Oh.
We want to thank Tracy Kahn and everyone there and his service department because I was coming in, riding in with flashers because my brakes went out.
Coming in hot?
Actually, I was coming in at a crawl, but that was okay. And so yesterday's remote cost me about $3,000.
Oh,
sheesh. So I want to thank everybody.
Wow.
And then I had to Uber home to go to Superintendent Brown's press conference and Mayor Lightfoot's press conferences. And I was carrying everything in my car with me, you know, like all the volleyballs and the cart and everything. So it was a fun day. But
sounds a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Good times. But I asked Mayor Lightfoot because remember it was Sean LaFord came on to respond to her saying, you know, you made me look darker and darker is scary.
Yeah.
Okay.
I took a hit for that.
Oh, well, I did the follow up. You know, why is dark scary? I said, you know, respond to LaShawn Ford, state rep, black Democrat, lives on the West Side.
Yeah.
Respond. All right. Last week, this is a follow up to the conversation we had last week about the super PAC that has a Summer of Joy ad. LaShawn Ford, black Democrat representing the West Side, took offense. He said, quote, "I don't need anybody saying the darker you look, the more dangerous you are." What is your response to him and to other African Americans who are upset that that you're saying dark is scarier?
I don't think I understood the question.
LaShawn Ford saw your response and he said that he, quote, "I don't need anybody saying the darker you look, the more dangerous you are."
I don't even know what to say in response to that. Some group that intentionally darkens my complexion and then shows a bunch of images of supposedly black men from Chicago engaging in criminal activity to a mostly white suburban audience. If you're not offended by that, I don't know what to say to you.
Wow.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. And I asked, too, you also said that video is showing scary black men doing things that aren't in Chicago. And I said, well, where, if it's not filmed in Chicago, where did this video come from?
Right.
Because it has CWB Chicago printed on it. Mm-hmm. The footage, according to Dan, because I asked him, because he runs the super PAC.
Yeah.
People who plays by the rule.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him, where did you get that footage? And guess he got it from Channel 9, from Channel 7, just from the video that they aired.
Yeah. You know why they can't lie anymore?
Why?
You have these groups out there like my Shy Crime Chasers and people like that are out there live as it happens.
The Chicago Street Creatures is a good one.
Yeah.
WB's good. 16th, 17th District. That's they are on it.
Yeah. They liked my comment that I made on Jesse Sullivan's about drag racing. We'll get into that later, I know.
Yeah, oh, yeah. We're going to do it because there's a new plan in
town
to stop that. But, I mean, are you offended still about what Mayor Lightfoot said?
No, it's politics. I think LaShawn Ford said it best. Your opponent's not going to put you in the greatest light, pun intended. I mean, they're just not. They're simply not. And, you know, when you do ads like that, the graphics, graphic cards, and things of that nature, that'll may either lighten it or darken it. So that's an aspect of doing these type of ads too. When you've been around that long enough, you know and understand that.
Yeah, but I keep thinking that she's trying to perpetuate the fact that racism is still really alive in Chicago.
Well, it's not racism if it's true. What was in that ad is true. This right. is what Glasgow said. This is what Berlin said. This is what actually happened. So the only thing that race has to do with it are the people that's involved in creating the chaos.
Right, but do you still feel people are racist toward you because you're a black man in the year 2022?
No, but I mean, listen.
I mean, but it does.
Racism is there.
Yeah, so is.
Racism is there. Listen, I've said on my show time and time again, America is no longer a racist country. America still has racists within their boundaries. They still do. That's a fact. Racism exists. But to call Dan Prof a racist, which I had to defend him on my show Saturday, somebody called in calling him. And you too.
Oh, me a racist?
Yeah, they called
too?
You and Dan a
Why
racist.
Why am I a racist? Yeah. I'm not some political operative who has big money.
Right.
I mean, people since I work here think, well, Dan's part of a super PAC. Well, you are
too. Yeah, Amy is too. Yeah,
yeah, I got big bones. Yeah. I mean, big bones in my pants. Yeah, right. excuse me.
Did you just say that? You go dump that?
To shell out to political early. PACs. Oh, I know. Excuse me. You know, I mean, come on. I'm driving a hobo ride. Give me a break. But the Safety Act is, you know, obviously top of mind. And Superintendent Brown was asked about that yesterday because if you think there's chaos now, dear Lord, just wait. And let me count down what number this is. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Let's hope and pray that this is the right one.
So we are monitoring social media.
Yep.
That's a whole nother press conference that we will be here for the rest of the day if you wanted my comments on it. Yes, I hope that there are some amendments to the Safety Act. I think some of those discussions are being had, but no, obviously, conclusions at this point. I think we have kind of a wait-and-see attitude right now.
Wait and see. Why don't you be proactive?
Yeah. What's the plan? You know what's happening. You know what's going to happen.
He said there could be a whole separate press conference where we talk about the Safety Act. Well, then do something about it now.
Yeah. Right.
And change what's happening now.
Right.
Because, again, yesterday I had heard him.
Well, he can't. I'm sorry, he can't.
Well, but he could sit down and talk to Kim. They were hugging the other day after a press conference. It was so weird. Mm-hmm. I was wondering what was going on there. But he can talk to her. Yeah. And yesterday he kind of deflected and said, well, we hope that the judges, you know, trying to separate. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not Kim Fox's fault. Mm-hmm. It's the judges' fault.
They do have a big part.
But they do have a big part
of it. Huge role in what's happening in Chicago and Cook County.
But why can't they all get together and just talk and make sure that straighten this out.
Chaos.
Even Pritzker, when he signed the crime bill, which I was there. It was at Chicago State University. We sat there for 2 hours.
Yeah, wasn't people like 700 talked, pages or something?
Yeah, like yeah. I mean, literally, it was this big. Yeah. And you know, no one in that room read that bill.
No.
You know, Governor Pritzker didn't read that. He was just signing and handing out pens. You get a pen, and you get a pen. And even reporters that were in there, the only people asking questions were me and Marianne here. Like, hey, there's a snitch line here.
Yeah.
And if you file a complaint against a cop, that cannot get expunged from that officer's record.
Right.
But if you commit a crime, you can get that expunged from your record.
Of course.
So it's not fair to police.
You know how those bills go?
No.
You get the bill. You get the analysis. Each House Republican analysis, Democrat House analysis.
He's former state rep.
Yeah. Okay. There were only a few of us that actually read the bills. I actually used to read the bills. Because I wanted to know what's in it.
Do people stick in recipes or something?
Hitting things in there?
You're just, you know, a poem or something.
No, they don't. They don't do that. No one really reads those bills. Anybody that tells you that they read those bills, some of them you can't. They come out.
There's not enough time.
And it's not enough time to read it.
And that's not a beach read either, that crime bill.
Yeah.
That Safety Act.
No. But this is that whole bill was a whole. They actually tried to run that when we did the first criminal justice reform and the police officer reform in 2015. A lot of those things that passed today with the Safety Act, those were things that they were trying to pass back in 2015. We defeated it though. But you had officers that were down there. You had, you know, reasonable Democrats on the other side of the aisle. I was like, we can't go with this.
And now?
Now? I mean, you got more progressives that are taking over.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. Let's go to Michael on the South Side. Good morning.
Good morning, Amy. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Hi. Ever since Mayor Lightfoot decided that she would only talk to black journalists, for our anniversary. She's been pulling this overtly racial hustle, and that's unfortunate. But am I the only one who's noticed that whenever she's trying to sell an agenda or something she truly doesn't believe in, she launches into this William Shatner type speech where she talks in these this authority, she has the authoritative voice, and she has these short word spurts that come out of her mouth. And you can tell that she just doesn't really believe in it, but she just has to try to sound as convincing as possible, like William Shatner overacting on Star Trek.
Oh, all right. Thanks, Michael. Thanks for calling in. I think he's first time. Is this your first time calling in, Michael?
Oh, no, I've called in to this show. I've called in to John's show. I've talked to Sean, talked to Mark Vargas.
Yeah. Oh, good.
I love the radio station.
Well, we love you calling in. Thanks, Michael. Stay safe. Stay sane. Just kidding. Craig in Mount Greenwood, you are on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Amy, and good morning, John.
Hey, good morning, buddy.
Thanks for taking my call. You know, Lori Lightfoot, she shows and exposes all the time just how racist she is. She's just, everything's race, and I mean really deep. She's deep racist. But here's the thing. Dan rubbed a tender spot, because these leftists, they don't like to be called out on anything. Yep. That PAC thing that Dan did, that hit it right on the head, and they survive and thrive by their lying and the deceit that the leftists do. So when you expose truth, they can't handle it, and they just go nuts with trying to basically cover it and spin it and everything. So that whole thing with Lori Lightfoot, it's going to probably be going on for a while. She's all flustered because the truth is exposed. She can't handle it.
All right. Thanks, Craig.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Love flying blind. Woo! All right. It happened on Friday. Where were you, everybody, when you heard the news?
Uh-oh.
The governor of New York, Kathy Hochul, came out, and she was speaking to a group, and I should have that in front of me. I really am looking for the paperwork. And she said this, and I literally, that's when I knew I was right. That's when you gather the kiddies around the computer and say, can you please just listen to this?
And the decisions were made to have all the kids go home and learn remotely. Wow. Wow. What a mistake that was.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36, type in DA, then a quick comment. Do you think we'll ever get that from Governor Pritzker?
No way.
Or from Mayor Lightfoot?
No.
Or for Gavin Newsom? But they're all in the same pod. They're all on the same team. Did she misspeak? I mean, did she fall on her head? Did something happen? Like, what?
We will never get that from them.
But she said it. So that means it must be true, and one must hear it again.
And the decisions were made to have all the kids go home and learn remotely. Wow. Wow. What a mistake that was.
And she spoke at a woman's equality investment group. What was it, Justin? Woman's equality event.
But I think she can say that because she wasn't the one at the time making those decisions.
Oh.
You see, she's throwing her predecessor under the bus.
Here's a headline in the Herald. After Pritzker school lockdowns, North Cook County student test score plummet. Tens of thousands more K-12 students in North Cook County are now testing below grade level in English and in math, suffering the after effects of Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker's school lockdowns, according to an analysis of Illinois State Board of Education test data by North Cook County News. All but one of the 36 school districts reviewed show significant student declines in scores for tests taken in 2021 versus 2019 before Pritzker's barred students from attending class.
Yeah.
Schaumburg Community Council School District, and it goes on and on about which school districts, but 27%, failure rates of 27% in math, 45 to 62% in English.
Yeah.
312-642-5600. I mean, things that they did. Mm-hmm. There was no three branches of government with Pritzker.
At all.
It was just one.
It was him. He made all. He was tyrannical in his decision making.
But how do we get that back? There's not enough time.
You don't.
You don't get it back.
You don't. You know, and you don't live the new normal. You say, screw their new normal BS. You know, they keep telling us, oh, we got a new normal. No, we don't. I never stopped living my life. I never, because I saw through all of this when it first happened. And I never stopped living my life. I tried to tell as many people as I could, don't stop living your life.
Well, you put your kids in schools that were open.
Yes.
Right? Well, Didn't you move them or what?
Yeah.
Can you remind me?
Families of Faith, Pastor Bland. I moved them there. They never closed. Never once. You know,
Did they close in March of 2020 or in April?
I think they closed for a couple of because nobody knew.
Yeah.
I mean, they said this is what's happening. And I still don't think Pastor Bland ever closed the school.
Did he close the church?
No. No, he didn't close the church at all.
That's what, when they close the churches down, that's when I lost it.
Yeah.
And that's when I started getting panic attacks.
Yeah.
Like, uh-oh.
Yeah. I lost it when they tried to shut me down. I said, I'm not letting you. Government does not have the power to do what they did.
Well, how did they try to shut you down?
I mean, kids and schools and going to work out. Stop it. If we would have just allowed that thing to run its perfect course, we would have been done and through with it by now. But they used this because there was an election coming up. I believe that with every fiber in me.
The mayor of Washington, D.C.?
Yeah.
Remember the no shots, no school? Muriel Bauer, supposed to take place on Monday?
Yeah.
Well, guess what she did?
What?
She's not admitting that the policy is wrong. So basically, you could go to school yesterday and today. You'd have 20 days to get vaccinated or else you get kicked out of school without an option for any remote learning. After all this, after all we know people, how many people do you know right now that have COVID that are four shots in?
Oh, I know.
My friend from the Netherlands, she's four shots in, got COVID again. Oh. Or for the first time.
Yeah.
Okay.
How'd that work out?
So she's pushing this back, the date for the COVID vaccine deadline, to January 3rd of 2023. So instead of just admitting this policy is wrong and I'm wrong, real leadership, because Dr. Fauci lives in this district. Dr. Walensky lives in this district. Yeah. It's in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And you think that they, that would be their time to step up and say, you know.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender, Signature Bank.
What?
No.
This is wrong, and you might want to just end the silliness.
Didn't the CDC change the guidelines, too?
Yeah.
Their CDC recommendations?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so she's still doing it, but instead of admitting she's wrong, she just pushed it back to January 3rd.
Let's double down on it.
Uh-huh. Also, taking a victory lap, so to speak, Aaron Rodgers, remember how he was vilified?
Oh, yes.
So he went on the Joe Rogan Experience for a lengthy interview about his NFL COVID-19 saga, you know, after he refused to take the experimental injection. Four-time NFL MVP, excuse me, said the league discriminated against him and unvaccinated players. And he and Rogan had some choice words for,
you gotta bleep any of this out.
How the world made them feel because they were unvaxxed.
They didn't give a
No.
You want to play football? Take this f***ing thing. And I want you to do it publicly so that I can get more money out of those other people that are thinking about it and they're on the fence.
Yeah, and then we're going to virtue signal to say, look how righteous our league is. We have 95% compliance.
Yes.
With the vaccine.
Compliance.
And if you don't, we're going to send a stooge to your team to show you graphs of your vaccination percentage of your team compared to the rest of the league, which actually happened.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
What was the stooge like?
Oh, I mopped the floor.
Fauci stooge.
Did you?
Yeah.
He mopped the floor.
See, again, that's why people are like, no one knew your vaccination status. You lied to your teammates. No, no, no. Day three of training camp, they sent this stooge in, and he showed these slides about what your vaccination percentage was in your team, where you compare to the rest of the league. And I started asking him questions about liability. Oh, I'm not a lawyer. Okay. Cool. But you're in here talking about all these different things, and you don't talk about anybody's personal health issues. There's zero exemptions. You took out religious exemptions. You took out PEG exemptions. You took out anybody's ability to have an opinion. Oh, I don't want to do this. Yeah. Well, it's not only going to affect your day-to-day status on the team, but your ability to get a job, your ability to keep a job, your ability to get a tryout if you get cut from this team.
Yep.
Because you want to put a percentage above 90% of your team where you guys can have some sort of like special virtue. Like, look how amazing we are. We're above the 90% threshold here.
And then they
and then they scared teams and said, if you had an outbreak caused by a non-vaccinated player, you'd not only forfeit that game if you had enough players out, but you wouldn't get paid for that week. And here I am showing up to training camp, Joe, the first day, and we got five people who work for the organization out with COVID, all fully vaxxed. And I got COVID from a fully vaxxed individual who only got vaxxed to keep his potential of being a part of the NFL.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
But they told us throughout, oh, if you get vaccinated, you won't be a spreader of it. And they were the biggest spreaders because I said it then. They felt so confident in that vaccine that they were going around people contaminated and spreading it like wildfire. I mean, this proves it.
I know. And where's our parade? Where's our victory lap? Rodgers, are you ready for this? He had to get tested every day for COVID-19 compared to every 2 weeks for the vaccinated players. And he had to wear a yellow wristband that identified him as unvaccinated, and he had to wear a face mask at all times while you're outdoor playing sports. Mm. Fraudulent, what we did. Wow. And anybody who pushed back, anybody who asked for, you know, what study are you basing your decisions on, spreading false information.
Let me just say this. You are spreading misinformation. I wish you would stop spreading misinformation. You come in here with a political agenda and you spread misinformation, and I just think you should stop. We now need to protect our children. We need to protect the people in our communities, parents, grandparents, teachers. You are working against that. And it is extremely upsetting for all of us who are trying to keep the rest of the state safe.
Killing people.
I've always been afraid of government being the arbiter of truth or information. And only when government only has the answer. Only government. If you come up with an opinion based upon the facts that you've read, you're the outlier. You're the one selling the misinformation, not them. That scares me when government does that.
Aaron Rodgers, by the way, I have something in common with him.
Yeah.
We are both allergic to PEG, polyglyphenol. I completely butchered that. If you want to try that, polythene glycol, it's otherwise known as PEG. It's if you ever get an MRI and you have to get an MRI with contrast, it's in that.
Yeah.
And I exploded when I got that, but I didn't know it was in the Pfizer or the Moderna. Mm-hmm. I was trashed for an hour 45.
Sheesh.
My blew up. And then this shop's been closed for 10 years, and I got a full-blown period.
So you just throw it on
the next day, I didn't buy tampons. Like, what is going on here? So when people say that, there is something to your reproductive organs that were affected by the Pfizer and the Moderna. And now I'm pregnant with six tuplets. Thank you. I'll name my first kid Justin, then Quinn, Mike.
John, come on. Let's go.
Let's go to the phone line. Susie on the north side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning.
Hello.
Amy, I hope your van didn't cost too much the other day.
Oh, it did. But thanks for thinking of me. That was a $1,000 plus remote broadcast yesterday from Joe Cotton Ford. But we're alive, so. But thanks for asking.
Yeah. Sure. Everything that's going on, everything, if you think in all everything that they do, is they've got their orders, and it's all the pathway to their new world order. The whole COVID thing and keeping us in was all a test to see how far they can go. Now they're backstepping because elections are coming up. If these clowns get in, I don't know what's going to happen then. I don't know if you guys agree, but I know I read a lot of stuff. I told you about the real Anthony Fauci book and all that, but it's all a pathway to their new world order, all backed by George Soros and Gates and all that. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks, Susie.
Have a great day.
Appreciate your phone call. Let's go to Matt in Mount Greenwood. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, hi.
What's up, Matt?
Hey there. I just wanted to say, good morning, by the way.
Morning.
I just wanted to outline Pritzker's daughter having a great time down in the Bahamas and down in Florida while she was riding equestrian, while the rest of our children were in lockdown and suffering the consequences of his dictatorship. I like to refer to Pritzker as Governor Matzo Ball. I think it's a little bit better than Jelly Belly, actually.
Okay.
Have a good day.
All right. Thanks, Matt. And also, too, we should mention that 90 pastors have declared
that
they will never again shut down their churches.
You should have did it in the first place.
A coalition of more than 90 American pastors from different denominations have boldly declared that they will never again comply with government orders to close their churches, taking a biblical rallying cry from Acts 5:29, right? That we must obey God rather than man.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah, there were pastors out there saying that, and they were being shunned.
Remember that? We'd have pastors call
pastors
into this
being shunned.
Station, and police would be outside. I remember at Easter time, I sat outside my church because I was just so, like, it is Easter.
Yeah.
Christ is risen. Mm-hmm. A neighbor called the cops on me. All I was doing was sitting, watching the live feed from outside the church.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you.
Wow. Is that Pastor Christian Ionescu or whatever his name is?
I don't know.
Pastor with life would try to shut him down and.
Yeah, that's the one that called in here.
Yeah,
that's
I
the Roman.
Yes, that guy. He's the real deal.
Yeah, I don't know if he signed this. You can look at the list.
Yeah, he's the.
There's your homework assignment for the 6 o'clock break. But I mean, it was just crazy how people turned on each other, and now you know, and we're still wearing masks at my church.
What?
Which is yeah, still wearing masks. So I
don't think I've ever. I don't think I've seen anybody with a mask on in my church.
Ever?
I mean, there were a few people who were compromised, immunocompromised, but I don't think today none. I don't see not one person.
I know. Another reason why I should change churches.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
All right, we have a plan. Amy Jacobson here. Good morning. John Anthony in for Dan Proft today. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Black and Right Radio, which you can see and hear every Saturday from noon to 3 o'clock.
That's right.
Yesterday, they came out with a plan. There is a way to stop this drifting and drag racing, which has just really paralyzed the city of Chicago. This is what it sounds like. This is from a few, you know, 100 feet away, how loud it is. You know, drifting means doing donuts. Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you know that, but for people at home watching on the Matrix Home Solutions camera there, I don't know if they know, but this is what it sounds like. And people are hanging out windows while they're going really fast around in a circle. And residents, obviously, who are trying to sleep at 3 in the morning, 2:30, 1:30. I mean, this lasted Friday night into Saturday morning. Saturday morning into Sunday, there was drag racing, there was drifting. The police told me that there was, what, for every intersection, there's cars that are spinning, but there's 200 that are waiting to get into the action. So, and then plus hundreds of people. So technically, we wish that we could impound not only the cars that are doing it, but the spectators. Okay, some residents are annoyed because it's very loud.
You know, it's not legal, and, you know, there's a lot of noise, a lot of commotion.
But others think it's cool. What?
I think it's pretty cool, but probably the timing is bad because it's 2:30 a.m. in the morning and people are sleeping.
How's that cool?
That resident is, I mean, people, a Chicago police officer almost got killed at Columbus and Wacker trying to stop the drifting. He almost got hit by a car. They did arrest a 19-year-old from Worth. And thank God they did charge him with aggravated assault of a police officer.
Okay. What about, they didn't, he was in a vehicle, they didn't charge him with aggravated reckless driving?
No. No.
Okay.
But other people, other residents, they've had enough.
Well, I hope that leadership will step in and actually hold people accountable.
Police say some people, and that's...
So, it's just a hot mess. And they don't, even if they had 300, one of the chiefs pulled me aside yesterday and said, even if we had 300 people to match up with those 300 people, we still need more. Yeah. And why is that? Because six squad cars had heavy damage. So responding officers are pull up to these scenes. People throw rocks at them. I tweeted a picture out. It's absolutely, it's nauseating. The lack of respect for police. So then you have rocks being thrown. Bottles, firecrackers, and then one, they uprooted a tree. Did you see that one? They're chasing him down with a tree. I'm like, what are you, a tree? Yes, because there's an absolute lack of respect. So they have a solution.
Hercules.
Are you ready? It's called the Caravan Task Force. It's being rolled out. It has been rolled out. It's going to be rolled out. That was the thing, too. I said, well, how long has this been around? They said, well, 3 weeks, but now they're going to start employing other equipment to try and stop this. Here's Chief Brian McDermott.
City assets such as salt trucks, mobile pod trucks and trailers, tow trucks, and additional technologies are being utilized. We have created a caravan task force whose primary purpose is to enforce our existing ordinances for drifting and drag racing. They also impound vehicles. They identify offending vehicles that were not immediately apprehended for future impound. The city's new ordinance allows CPD members to impound vehicles that were positively identified by pod, private camera, or by an officer's observations after the date of time of occurrence. Our caravan task force and SDSC rooms will work relentlessly after these incidents occur using pods, LPRs, to identify the offending vehicles. Those of you who think you have gotten away with these crimes, they may soon find their vehicles towed, impounded, and face up to a $10,000 fine. Let me say that again, because I think it's very important that everyone understands that. For those of you who think you've gotten away with these crimes, you may soon find your vehicle towed, impounded, and face up to a $10,000 fine.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. So far, 9 arrested, 7 vehicles impounded. 7.
Yeah.
And there are 22 others that they're looking for to impound, but now the bad guys know that they're looking for their plate, so they could easily change their plate. They're looking for distinct markings on their car.
Mm-hmm.
They could easily paint over that.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But will it work, though? I look at this. I mean, I think back to when Mayor Richard Daley was in office.
Oh, God, love him. I miss him.
I love my CPD. I love them. And I just hate what's becoming of them. It pains me. And I get why they retreat. But it pains me that they have to retreat and they back up. And they, you know, I know why. I get the why of why they do it.
Yeah, because they want to go home and see their family. It's scary.
Right.
Even just watching it looks like a horror film.
Right.
And there's white kids doing it and brown kids and black.
Right.
It's not all black kids. I mean, there's a lot of white kids out there that are throwing rocks at police that have, they had the COVID face mask on, so
right.
It's hard to identify them.
Right.
How convenient for everybody.
So that should be
get
aggravated.
Rid of the gosh darn masks.
That should be aggravated, period. Anytime you conceal your face, that used to be, it automatically jumped
really?
Everything to aggravated based upon the crime.
Oh, not
but
anymore.
Not anymore, right? But you can have this plan, but if the judges, if Kim Fox and the judges don't go along with the plan, especially with January 1st with the Safety Act rolling out, I mean, these people will be right back out on the street.
But in the meantime, what are you doing to keep police officers safe?
Correct.
What are you doing to keep police safe? Because there was rocks thrown at officers, bricks, and fireworks.
So one of the things that I really want to highlight, and thanks for the question, is holding people accountable. Just because we didn't arrest you or tow your car when the incident happened, there's video of you. There's video of your car and your behavior. And we won't rest until we bring everyone involved with harming our officers, damaging property, city property, our squad cars, to justice. And we'll prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law.
You can't do anything. You don't prosecute to the fullest extent of the law. The courts do. And where are they? Where are the judges? Where's Kim Fox? These officers are putting their lives on the line daily. For what?
And a woman died.
Yes.
Right, so a police officer almost got killed. And a woman died. They were speeding, drag racing. Two Corvettes were drag racing down Cicero Avenue near Midway Airport at 64th Street there. And a 40-year-old woman who was celebrating her 41st birthday, visiting here from Florida, going to a late dinner with her boyfriend, gets killed in the middle of the street. Her name was Shaman Mirsais, and she was, again, visiting with her boyfriend. And these two were cutting each other off, weaving through traffic until one of them hit a car and then careened into her as she crossed the street early Sunday.
Wow.
She was thrown into the pavement as the crumpled Corvette came to rest near the corner of 65th Street. Witnesses say she went in and out of consciousness until paramedics took her to Christ Medical Center, where she died.
Wow.
The boyfriend was seen grabbing the driver of the Corvette and throwing him against a tree light.
My man.
"You killed my girlfriend," he said. "You killed my girlfriend."
My man.
I love him. Because that's sheer rage right there, because this is just stupid.
Yeah.
We have complete lawlessness in this city, and now people are dying. Eduardo in Midway, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I saw that this morning on Daily Mail, because I live by Midway Airport. And they're always drag racing on Archer Avenue, Sister Avenue, Harlem Avenue. Yeah. And it's a shame. I told somebody on another show that they need the curfew, not just for the drag racing, but I noticed a lot of crime happening between 12 and 5. I think more than crime happening between 7 p.m. and 12 a.m. If you did some kind of like polling, I wouldn't be surprised about the time most crime happens.
Yeah. And the douchebag who hit her told police that he was fleeing a carjacking. Yeah, right.
Oh, he's racing another Corvette. But yeah, okay.
The woman who was killed, she was visiting from Naples, Florida.
Oh, God. I'm sorry. It just pains me that what's happening to this city. And when I made that post about Daley, somebody said, "That's your narrow thinking as to why fascism takes a hold." And I'm like, no. And he said, it doesn't matter who's in charge, because the CPD and FOP have run the city of Chicago during Daley, and they run it now. He has no clue about who's – CPD does not run Chicago at all. FOP does not run the city of Chicago. Lori Lightfoot runs the city of Chicago with her ilk. And they're destroying this city. They're destroying these people's lives, and somebody's got to do something about it. But they can continue to keep electing the same old fools thinking that they're going to change something. And they haven't changed a darn thing yet. And people are dying. People are losing their... People can't leave this city because they don't have the wherewithal to do so. And nobody's
right.
doing anything. Nobody's out there fighting for these people.
We've got salt trucks. We have salt trucks. Oh, and of course they deflected and said, well, this is happening in other cities.
Who cares?
That's what I said. I don't want to hear that again. It's happening in L.A. We know. Who cares? We don't care about, we care about Chicago.
Right.
And these new salt trucks that they're going to whip out this weekend and the garbage trucks. And, well, there might be a problem with that. Listen in.
About the salt trucks and the larger vehicles to block. The locations where our drifters are choosing are more porous than maybe some of the other locations in other cities. So we have an increasingly large challenge. It's hard to just block off the area where they are and then have them blocked in because there's so many exits. There's so much ingress and egress that we can't, that won't be successful. So we have to be a little bit more strategic maybe than some other cities who can easily block in. It's much more difficult to block in. I could just tell you what'll stop next week's if your car is towed and you got to pay 10 grand to get it out. That's what's going to stop next week's and the next week's. So more cars towed. I'm not opposed to raising it from 10,000 to 20,000.
That's the thing. More cars towed.
Yeah.
It will stop.
Yeah.
Is that going
to
happen?
No. Amy, go to the Gemba. Yeah. One thing I learned in Six Sigma lean, understanding how to go in and change things. I guarantee you, if they went and talked to the grunts on the ground about how to fix this problem, I guarantee you there are cops. I guarantee you there are people who are just grunts, kick the door kickers. I guarantee you they have a plan way better than what the plan that they're doing. Because this is all talk. This is all we want to show that we're doing something. But nothing's getting done.
Well, they'll bring the salt truck to one intersection, and then they go to another intersection.
Correct.
The one chief told me is that they hit almost every district. They knew we were coming because they were monitoring them on social media, which they also, too, have a dark channel, which cops can't see in.
Yeah.
So they go there, and then they skip to another intersection. But, I mean, they hit almost 40 different intersections.
Yeah, exactly.
That's and we're talking 200 cars and about, you know, hundreds of people.
Yeah,
they got and the cars are waiting, so they just the cars illegally parked, so there's no freedom of movement for regular, you know, people who have to go to work and work the night shift, you know, people who pay taxes. So they block the intersections completely. So it's you got to get your salt truck there before.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they're. I mean, logistically, it's a nightmare. But I was also told in order to protect police, they're now going to have shields and body armor, in this caravan.
Yeah.
Task force, they're going to have a van that's going to have protective wear for officers. Like if those officers weren't inside their car, they would have gotten killed.
Yes.
I mean, there was dozens of people running towards one car and throwing things at them. If they got out, they'd be dead.
Yeah.
No questions asked. All right, let's go to Phil on the Northwest side.
Yeah, I think they're overblowing this. I really feel bad for cops and everybody else. But, you know, when we were kids, we used to race cars. And we would go to Doty Road, and we'd go to parking lots, and we'd go to abandoned areas. And we never screwed with cops. There's the difference.
That's factual.
As far as who runs the city, there's some underlying thing that's not being talked about here. And we sell massive amounts of heroin and coke. And Chicago's still a speakeasy. It's been a speakeasy since the 20s.
Yep.
And it is astronomical, the amount of heroin we've sold in the last 40, 45 years, especially after they got rid of industry. You can buy heroin cheaper than pot. It's disgusting. It's terrible. And it's very sad because a lot of these kids get their money from dealing drugs on the side for their cars. A lot of them, not all of them. And then when you look at who actually runs the city, okay, the people closest to the mayor, a lot of aldermen and a lot of cops are forced to be in this, or their families are taxed. Not the mayor himself. The mayor himself could have did something about this a long time ago. Any of these mayors, it is so disgusting on the south side and on the west side. I grew up on the west side,
right.
And it's horrible. It's horrible. That's what really needs to stop. If you stop that, you're going to stop more than half the shootings. You're going to stop more than half the crime.
All right, thanks.
And shut down every open market that's out there. You know what an open market is?
People
that can freely go out and sell drugs.
No, I know.
Shut them all down.
I was in Little Village this weekend. I've been, you know, and I couldn't believe, like, oh, they're not talking to their friends. They're buying and selling drugs. They do it. They don't care.
They got hip to the fusion center, the intelligence units. You know, they gather all of the social media stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been to the fusion center down in Chicago?
No,
is it? It's a fascinating thing where they get pretty much monitor all the social media traffic from the center.
Really?
Is it in the 911 building?
I won't
say where it's at.
Okay. Oh, it's an undisclosed location.
I won't say where it's at.
All right, Lee and Hammond, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, guys. You know, these burnout circles, if I'm driving through the city, it's mostly the southeast and south side, And these burnout circles are all over the place. It's not just in certain areas. It's all over the town.
Oh, yeah.
But the other thing, you know, the prior caller talked about the industry, you know, the drugs coming in when the industry left. And I'm old enough. I worked in industry in the city, just about more than half my life. And finally, I was forced, actually, out of the city and having to find jobs elsewhere because the industry all shut down. And I always did think that these people that worked in these factories, that kind of thing, if it, and I grew up in the hood. I'm not, okay. I never grew up in this old, you know, great lily white suburb or anything like that. But I always thought that if it wasn't for those jobs that industry provided a lot of people, this would have been going on 70, 80 years ago. But when the industry left, the city died, and if it's not for jobs, the whole point of having a city are people congregating together to get work and get employment. And you cannot run an economy at Walmart and Starbucks. It's just not going to happen.
All right, thanks, Lee.
Yep. Okay, guys.
Thanks for the phone call, Lee. Let's go to Tony on the South Side. Good morning, Tony. Hey. How are you?
Good morning, Amy, my Lamy Lamb, and John Anthony.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
I want to point out something that Spectator Auto Sports, has been around since the early 1900s, right? They used to have a thing in Comiskey Park back in the old days in the 1920s called Auto Polo. And it was like polo, but you use automobiles, right? It was reckless. People loved it. So here's my thought. Why don't we take Soldier Field and repurpose it, right? We can use the interior as like a little oval for the drag racing or, you know, whatever you want to do, or the drifting. And then the outside in the parking lot, you could have maybe a half mile, quarter round oval that they could do drag racing on, or like NASCAR. And since,
NASCAR.
You know, I know, and since the city's so big on sponsoring midnight basketball and things late nights, they could sponsor this, like late night drifting, sponsored by City Chicago, give away cash prizes. That's a great idea. There solves your problem. All right, guys.
Thanks.
You. Have a good day.
Tony. Let's quickly go to Mike in Indian Head Park. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, guys. First off, I just want to say I appreciate you guys. And let you guys know that there's still officers in Indian Head Park that are facing termination for the vaccine mandate.
Oh,
jeez.
Not only are they threatening termination still, but it's also affected promotions, these kind of things.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Mike. That was last segment, but still.
Yeah.
Can never talk about it enough how people are just clinging on to this COVID.
Yeah.
It's just hard to convince people that they've been fooled for 3 years.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
Because you've been telling your kids, I'll wear it. Now you're like, oh, but there's three large studies that came out saying about the ineffectiveness of masks just this summer alone. Mm. So anywho. All right, let's go to Greg in Jefferson Park. Good morning, Greg. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Amy, John.
Good morning.
You know, there's a show coming to town in about 2.5 weeks, IMTS, which is the largest trade show actually in the country. It has about 130,000 people coming to it. And I know that this past weekend and a number of other times, they're closing off an intersection right next to McCormick Place. And, you know, I got to tell you, that show takes over a week to set up and a week to take down, and you're going to have hundreds of semis bringing tens of millions of dollars worth of machinery down there to install for this show. It is huge, and I can tell you that if companies have problems with stuff being stolen or they can't get in and do all that, you're going to lose a trade show that brings a boatload of money to the city. It's the largest trade show in the country.
Wow.
Anyways, have a good one.
Thanks, Greg, for this heads up. And real quick, let's go to Verlon on the south side. Hi, Verlon.
Cop hater.
How you doing? That guy 6 calls ago stole my thunder. I'm still going to make my statement, but I have to ask you this, Amy, to bring down the temperature just a little bit. John and I have this question that we ask people almost every episode. Who's the better singer, Marvin Gaye or George Michael?
Oh, God.
Marvin Gaye.
Boom.
George Michael. Oh.
Thank you, sir. Red Velvet.
I honestly wanted to look like George Michael and do the kick step. I never could. But anyway, Amy, have you ever heard of The Need for Speed and Fast and Furious?
Yes.
It's a rite of passage for young men to race their cars. I had a 69.98 and my cousin had an 84 Delta 88, and we used to race on Doty Road and on Torrance. Yeah. Those were the
That's
two favorite drag race strips.
That's right.
Oh, we had Cuba Road up where I grew up.
They're shutting down entire intersections.
Well, they're and they're killing it. Like the two guys racing their Corvettes are trying to show off for each other, and next thing you know, this poor innocent woman from Naples, Florida, is dead. But yeah, there's, I mean, what, should we give them a safe space?
Well, just like they do drugs, people, drug users, give them, you know, a space to go and do it. No, come on. No, no, you shut it down. You do not allow them to do it anywhere. Every time you see it build up, shut it down.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
And Mike Scott, you can get in on this.
Oh, I mean, my gosh, Verlon. We need to have a conversation. Gee whiz. I grew up in Michigan, so I'm a Motown guy, but come on.
George Michael? George Michael. He thinks he's better than Marvin Gaye.
He does. I'll take Daryl from Hall & Oates over George Michael singing singing Blue Eyed Soul.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Thank you.
Verlon lost his black card a long time ago.
Love you, Verlon. Love you.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Wake me up before you go, go. Trash music. Are you kidding me, Verlon? George Michael died at 53.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
I think he sold like 120 million albums, too.
He had a bit of a weight problem, according to TMZ, before he died. So he died from heart failure. All right. So now that we've settled, Marvin Gaye is a much better singer. We can move on with our day. And one man that is gone but not forgotten, former Alderman Bob Fioretti, two-term Chicago Second Warden, also the Second Ward Democratic Committeeman from 2008 to 2016. And now he wants a new job, and he joins us on our turnkey.pro answer line. Good morning, Mr. Fioretti.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good to be here. Thanks.
So what position is one seeking now, and why?
Well, I'm running against Tony Preckwinkle, that brings an honest leadership and an effective leadership to the county board president's office. An office that should be truly independent, not beholden to a self-serving, corrupt Chicago political machine. And you pointed out that I've run as a Democrat in the past, but the extreme left has taken over the Democratic Party here in Chicago and in Cook County. It's making it unrecognizable. It's simply not the party that I once knew. I've spent years serving the public, fighting against the establishment, the Democratic machine of Chicago, fighting corruption, fighting bad policies, fighting bad economic policies. But I was one of the few in the city council that always supported law enforcement while everybody turned their backs on it. I believe I can bring real effective leadership that Tony Preckwinkle has lacked in the county. And I am taking her on as a Republican. I was recruited by the Republican Party. If you listen to the debates between her and I 4 years ago, and close your eyes as you listen to it, during that Democratic primary, people said I sounded like a Republican then. Mm-hmm. I say when I was recruited, I have served on the local GOP policy group for the last few months, and when I say almost 2 years, advising them as to what we should do on our schools, how we deal with crime, how we deal with economic development here in the city, and that is why. And so I am running against Tony Preckwinkle, who has also, I should say, the architect for most of the problems that we have here in this city and in the county. She decided what policies should be for Kim Fox. She is the mentor to Kim Fox. She sets the policy in the state's attorney's office. She also sets the policies in Chief Judge Evans' office. She Preckwinkle, has led the charge to defund the police. All the while, we have seen crime, violent crime, at historic levels. And at the same time, she's
she, Tony Preckwinkle, has advocated for less prosecutions from the state's attorney's office, no cash bail, allowing violent criminals to return to the streets, and essentially endangering most, if not all, Cook County residents.
So you're Chicago's version of Charlie Crist.
The what?
You're Chicago's version of Charlie Crist, who's going to be running against DeSantis. He used to be a Democrat. Now he's a Republican. So when you changed parties, did you lose any friends along the way?
I've heard it. And people have said things. People have said that they can't, they can't, because, but they're the leftist Democrats. But I get along. I'm still a consensus builder.
Yeah.
And I think people have to open their eyes here in Cook County. We're beyond the tipping point. The problems that we have facing us now have to be solved, and they have to be solved fast. Otherwise, I'm going to tell you, there's no turning back where this county is headed. Cook County residents deserve a good, fair leadership, effective leadership, instead of self-serving, mediocre. Don't forget, Tony Preckwinkle is head of the Democratic Party here in Cook County. And the machine controls what they need to do here.
And
those
even,
are the problems that we're facing
with. And she didn't even win her ward when she ran for mayor.
Right.
That's how bad and how, you know, unlike she is. But you mentioned too that she is the mentor, her mentor, Kim Fox, and her are thick as thieves. And I just wanted to play this for you in case you haven't heard. Kim Fox spoke at an event for graduates from Stateville Correctional Center. They got their master's degree in Christian ministry, and they had a celebration at North Park University. And Kim Fox grew up in Cabrini Green, and this is what she told the graduates.
I'm here today because, as I tell people, I have more in common with you than the lawyers that work for me. I have more in common with you because I've walked the path that you have walked, and there is no judgment of how we land where we land. It is God's grace.
So she's telling people that, you know, convicted felon, that she has more in common with them.
So she's been locked up?
Than she, pardon?
She's been locked
That's
up
That's what
before.
I said too. Like, well, what crime did she commit? Yeah. No, she's never committed a crime, but she's more, you know, that's why I think her main objective is to clear the prisons. And is that the same thing that Tony Preckwinkle wants?
Tony Preckwinkle 4 years ago talked about lowering the jail population during the debate. She said that was her aim. She's been very successful on it. Look what's happening in our streets. Look at the chaos that we're facing in our streets. Look at the disrespect for our police officers and law enforcement across this county and state that we see because of this type of attitude. Again, if we don't take back some of these positions in this election, there is no turning back for this city, county, and state.
We
need to do it soon.
You talked about open your eyes. What's your message? What's your plan to open the eyes? Because as you look at the South Side, the West Side, you look at some of the South suburbs in Cook County. These people, continue to vote for the Preckwinkles and the city of Chicago, the Lightfoots. What's your plan to open those eyes?
Well, first of all, I have to get the message out. And, of course, the message is based upon how much money you can raise. And I'm behind the eight ball at that right now. Secondly, I have spent a considerable amount of time in the South and West Sides over the last few weeks in the South suburbs. And I see people coming up to me and say, she has to go. And those African-Americans, Latinos, the Asian population feels the same way. But we need to get, if half of those people say, of what they say, and go to the polls and vote for me, I can win this election.
Are you capturing that data when these people are out there telling you? Are you finding out who these people are?
We're working with them. They say they want to help in the campaign. They want to go door to door. They want to bring the message of hope here. Look, when we have so many African-American middle-class people leave this city,
for other places. Now, I'll give you an example. You know, I brought 8,000 jobs as alderman to my ward. I had economic development. Every policy that I'll institute as president of the Cook County Board will have economic growth behind it. But I have seen so many of the people that we have trained, hired in our communities have moved out due to the violence that is happening. And they have moved. They still work at many of these locations, but they have just said they can't take the violence anymore. The other night with this, all this stuff that was happening in the streets, I know I heard the squad cars all night long racing to stop some of the drag racing that was happening here on the West Loop and the West Side.
No, it's insane. And they could just go from intersection to intersection, and it's all weekend long. It's not one night. It's, you know, from midnight till 5 in the morning. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. So, and if you see some of those aerial views on what, you know, they have 6-7 squad cars that have to back up as the crowds are charging the police officers. There's a drone video that's out there. It's unbelievable about what we see. And the complete lack and breakdown of respect for law enforcement, it comes from, everybody blames the mayor. She's just a little cog in this whole wheel. It really comes from the Cook County Board president who brought in Kim Fox, who dictated the policies of the criminal court system and told everyone what they need to do. And as her being an advocate of defunding the police movement, this is what we get.
Well, in the few moments remaining, is there any way you could retell that story about how then Mayor Rahm Emanuel put you in a room once because he didn't want you to be on stage with him at some school?
Oh, God.
Remember that story?
Oh, yes. He did not want to be near me. And he was, part of the problem. Because his economic programs, economic policies were detrimental to the city. There were a lot of items that I've raised during that campaign, but they tried to mute me. They knew I was an anti-corruption candidate at that time. And they muted me by some of my biggest contributors, law firms, other individuals, said, hey, we got a case. We can't give you any more money. We don't know anything about this type of work, but, our firm is now tied. And they spread enough lies on who I am to make my voice ineffective and muted.
And then there was an event, where a campaign event. Well, they were at a school, and so they gave the alderman a tour of the school, and they put him in a room up here so that he wouldn't be on stage, and they wouldn't let him out. They just, said, you're going to stay here, and wasted your time giving you a tour while Mayor Emanuel spoke. It's just, it's so
and
classic
it was a South
Chicago.
Loop school where we started a community component as we built that school. South Loop is one of the top in the country. And I'm proud of the work that I did because I had more schools than anybody, any other alderman. I had 40-some schools. Wow. I made sure that they got the resources. I developed ambassador programs with all of our museums so the museums can come out to our schools and let our kids learn. I mean, our children are a precious resources that we have to deal with. I ran originally because I live a half a block from Whitney Young, and I'm looking out my front window right now, and if I look down Jackson, I can see Crane. At that time, it was one of the more distressed schools. I can walk to Crane in 6-10 minutes. I mean, why such a disparity? When you get to the city council, guess what? They have nothing to do with education. They have an education committee. They spend a small fortune, but we have nothing. We can't set policy. We can't influence. But I tried to give what I could out of funding to each and every school to help elevate our kids, to make them learn. I used to bring our kids up. I would have a once a year a photography session in cooperation with the people that ran Sears slash Josh Willis Tower and bring them up to the top. It was always such a joy because to see those kids looking out over the city and see what could be done and the greatness of what this city should be, what this county can be, but not with the type of leadership that we have now.
Well, you've always been compassionate and caring, and you really we do wish you the best. Bob Fioretti, we're going to have to leave it there. Republican now and running for Cook County Board President against Tony Preckwinkle. Where can we get more information about your campaign?
FioretiForCook.com, F-I-O-R-E-T-T-I, forcook.com. And it's the website and what can be done. And we're going to be setting policies over the next few weeks as this election is approaching very rapidly. And vote for Bob on November 8th, and I appreciate being on the show, and thank you.
Thank you, Bob. FioretiForCook.com, and Bob Fioretti joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
All right, welcome back to Chicago's Morning Answer. Amy Jacobson here, John Anthony, and for Dan Proft today. Appreciate it. Guess who's coming in tomorrow?
Oh,
Rod Blagojevich.
Governor, I've tried to get him on my show. Okay, that's not going to... I see the favoritism.
Oh, somebody's mad.
Okay, Governor. Yeah, I'll give you a call when we get out. When I get out of here.
So just a little programming note there. But Alderman Ray Lopez joins us on our turnkey.pro answer line because he wants to curb the mayor's powers and get this, cut the city council by half, an idea that was once brought up by Alderman Ed Burke. Remember that?
Yes.
And also former Mayor Rahm Emanuel. But this time's different, right, Mr. Lopez? Good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Amy. Good morning, John. Hey, yes, this time is different. This time I think momentum is on our side coming out of the pandemic, realizing just how much of government is automated and goes through the internet, the realization that you don't need all 50 aldermen anymore, I think is finally going to become a reality in the city of Chicago.
Well, how do you go about proposing that? And that probably isn't sitting well with any of your colleagues there on the city council.
Well, I think this is twice in 2 weeks I've aggravated my colleagues in city council. First saying that we need to cut the body in half, and then last week saying that they didn't deserve the $12,000 raise they were quietly trying to accept, hoping no one brought light to, which I did as well. You know, what I am proposing is when I become mayor of the city of Chicago, that we actually form a Chicago Charter Commission to create a living governmental document similar to a constitution for the city of Chicago. Because right now the city is operated under tradition and status quo, and we've seen what that has gotten us over the last 50 years. It's time for a redux. It's time to give the people the opportunity to vote on the government they want. And I believe that will include a reduced, slimmer, leaner, and more authoritative city council.
Well, and then what about cutting the mayor's power? So if you have less city council members, will that help reduce her, you know, her tyranny that she's had over this for at least the past 2.5 years? 2 years, I should say.
Well, to be fair, and, you know, as much as I'd love to beat up on Lori, we have seen where the overreach of the mayor's office has extended, not just from this mayor, but from past mayors, from the last couple past mayors. We have seen where, because the mayor's appointees are completely and solely beholden to the mayor, that they've never acted in the best interest in the city of Chicago, which is why I'm also proposing that through this new charter that we would have 3 independently elected citywide officials added to the roster, an elected city comptroller, an elected corporation counsel, and an elected inspector general. The city comptroller obviously would help make sure that there are no budgetary gimmicks, that we're not using smoke and mirror voodoo kind of economic strategies to make our budgets a reality in the city of Chicago. An elected corporation counsel would ensure that that individual is the city's lawyer and not just solely acting as the mayor's lawyer, advising them, as we've seen under the last two administrations very badly, both with Anjanette Young and with Laquan McDonald. And I think that we can have a first-in-the-nation elected inspector general, you know, keeping in mind that we know how to separate politics from the elections the way we do with the judicial system, but making sure that that position has the ability to speak on their own independently, regardless of what the administration or their allies want to do. Right now, the inspector general can publish all the reports they want, but unless two aldermen say they want to hear it, it just sits on their shelf and collects dust. We need to be able to change that. And I think creating more citywide elected officials to run as checks, along with giving oversight, true oversight and financial responsibility to city council for these departments that the administration runs, will finally bring balance to the city of Chicago's government.
Yeah. And, you know, Alderman Lopez, one of the things I really believe Chicago is a wonderful and amazing city. I agree.
I mean, when riding through the streets, going on the 606 trail the other day, I mean, there's some beautiful pockets.
It really is.
Do you feel safe getting there and getting home?
Correct.
From things like the 606 trail.
Correct.
It's a problem.
But I look at, you know, some of the reasons why people fear coming to Chicago. The crime. You see what the open markets. Would that be something that the alderman or you as mayor will at one point deal with? And as it comes to appointing the next superintendent, can we choose someone from the state of Illinois, you know, or someone from the ranks of CPD? Because we have a ton of chiefs and sheriffs here in the state of Illinois that I believe would be perfect running the city of Chicago's police department.
Well, John, first let me start with, it boggles my mind as a sitting alderman how some of my colleagues could allow the open-air drug markets to persist for not just years but for decades without trying to stop it. It's amazing to me. I get infuriated when I see a pothole for a day. I don't know how anyone can turn a blind eye to an open-air drug market for 10 years. Yeah. When you look at what's going on in many of our neighborhoods, throughout all our communities, we have good people in the city of Chicago who just want help making sure that their neighborhoods stay safe, that their children can go to school, and that their families can go to work and seniors can sit on the porch and enjoy life. So many times that dream is being interrupted by the fact that you have a city that, in certain areas, the criminals are running at large with impunity, in part because the politicians are overlooking it and because we've decimated the police districts locally so that they do not have the specialized units to create the investigations that put career criminals and drug dealers and gangbangers behind bars. But that starts at the top.
I know, that but the left hand's not talking to the right hand. I know the mayor says, oh, we have to, you know, hold these criminals accountable. Brown says the same thing, yada, yada. But they don't sit down with Kim Fox.
They don't believe it.
Oh, they don't believe it? They're just...
I don't believe it. I don't think they believe it. Because anyone who actually believed that would be putting all the resources behind making that a reality.
Exactly.
And we don't do that. We do the exact opposite in the city of Chicago. We say, oh, we have to go after the gangs. We have to go after the guns. But yet, in the same breath, we destroy the gang and narcotics specialized units in CPD so that they can't do long-term investigations. We halt all coordination with the federal partners that we like to talk about so that we'll put these people behind bars. It's all a hypocrisy from this administration, because what they say out of one side of the mouth does not match what they do out of the other.
Yeah, and
I've been very consistent in that, and I think that you need to be able to hire, to answer your other question, a superintendent locally from Chicago who understands the communities, understands the streets, understands the brave men and women who put on that uniform so that you can put an end to this business as usual on the streets. And I believe that wholeheartedly.
Yeah. And I got to tell you real quick, I know you have a question to ask him, but yesterday at the press conference, Superintendent Brown, so we were at Horner Park. Horner Park, Chicagoans that we are, Montrose in California, and he says, and way across town in Rogers Park, a five-year-old was shot in the head, and I looked at other reporters
empathy.
Too. Like, no, but also, Rogers Park is that way, buddy, and it's two blocks away. You know what I mean? Like the true Chicagoans were like, dude,
straight from where you're at.
You need to know where you are. He doesn't know the city. There's no there. I am telling you, his heart is in Texas. I know it. And I wanted to ask him yesterday, you know, but they only give you two questions and then they take the mic away. It's so mind numbing. There's no follow up. That's because they don't allow the follow up. Yeah. So Dan sits here and rips on mainstream media journalists. You can't. They literally take the mic away from you.
Right.
And if you act up, then they'll kick you out of the press room. Yeah. But I wanted to ask, are you happy here? He doesn't seem happy here. Every press conference he does is just, you know, because they're making him do it. I just think that he needs to be replaced immediately with someone local, somebody in the department who there's so many people that I could name that he should replace them. If you become mayor, who would you replace him with?
I have a few ideas, but I think – you know, he's not going to go anywhere anytime soon.
Why?
You know, Lori Lightfoot likes having her front men spewing out the lies without flinching and then being whisked back to Dallas so that no one can do any follow-up. Like you said, no one can ask him, where's the plan? You know, it's all a show. And he is the $260,000 mouthpiece for the moment. But we have less than 190 days until both she is gone and then 6 weeks later, he will be gone as well.
Wow. You know, Alderman Lopez, I
not
remember.
Not that anyone's counting.
I remember as a kid growing up, I'm from Chicago.
He used to hand out flyers. Tell him what you did at the age of five.
Yeah, I was 21st Ward, 53rd Precinct. I was, you know, my stepfather was a precinct captain, so I got involved.
So you had a lollipop in one hand and flyers, Democratic flyers in the other going door to door?
Yeah, pretty much. I'll never forget swinging off the arm of Congressman Gus Savage at an event down at Grant Park. But I remember growing up, and I remember as a young teenager, the jump out boys. That's what they called. That's what we called them, the jump out boys. These were cops, unmarked cars that would just jump out on you. That was effective policing, but we've gotten rid of it. Is that something that you're looking at? I don't know if you know, but I'm also a former police officer, so I look at this from a police perspective. Is that something that is talked about or is considered bringing back to help in some of these really tough neighborhoods?
You absolutely need to have specialized units like the tactical teams and others to be in communities to focus on the very specific problems that those communities, those districts are dealing with and address them directly and specifically. You know, we cannot continue with this policy of having officers just walk around filling out, positive interaction cards. And
what is that? Cards. Like, if you say hi to somebody, that's part of their job every day. Who started that?
Yeah,
if you say hi, if you interact, that's a positive interaction, so we're going to mark that
down. We voted against that. Chicago FOP 7 Lodge actually made a deal with...
Yeah, because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, they made a deal
stupid.
With... I forget which group, but they made a deal to bring that into Chicago. We defeated that out of the original police reform bill.
And many Chicagoans would rather that our officers focus on those problem people in our community. You know, people like to gaslight the CPD saying that it's, you know, it's stop and frisk and mass, that it's, you know, policing run amok, a police state, this, that, and the other. But you ask any grandmother on a block.
That's right.
And if they can tell you who the problem is, then there's no reason the police shouldn't be able to figure it out as well. But you can only do that when you have the officers in a district and the bodies who can do more long-term investigations and build those relationships to learn and act on that information. Right now, I think I read a report that said, compared to April 2020, which was the last full month of the Rahm Emanuel administration, every single police district is about down 24% of the personnel it had from that point.
Wow.
So we've lost a quarter of our police presence in every police district throughout the city of Chicago, in large part because they've all been sucked out and put in citywide teams that are beholden only to David Brown or Eric Carter and are not in the districts responding to calls, doing what they need to do, which is why we so oftentimes find 311 calls being put in a wrap, taking 30, 40, an hour and 20 minutes to respond to. That is not how you build confidence in the community, and that's not how you address the violence and the criminals acting out in our neighborhoods when they know that no matter what they do, it's going to take at least an hour to get the police to address the situation.
Wow.
So changing subjects quickly about this automatic pay raise that's coming, because 15 years ago, the city council approved a measure that would give its members pay raises that would be tied to the rate of inflation. And looky here, 5.5% pay raise last year. Potentially, you're in line for a nearly 10% increase in salary. So what are you going to do? Because the only way to get out of it is if you opt out. So under the city ordinance, you have to decline the pay hike before September 2nd. Have you done that? And if so, why?
I will be declining the pay raise. I'll be filling out the paperwork later today. I went public with this because I think that's an obscene amount of money for aldermen to be asking for and quietly accepting without letting their residents know they're doing it. There's nothing I could do to stop it right now in the municipal code. However, I will be introducing an ordinance to amend this provision that allows for these automatic increases based on inflation so that they are, one, capped at 3%, two, only allowed raises at the end of their term for the oncoming term, and resets the salary down about $22,000. So I'm going to try and force everyone down $22,000, because when I was elected alderman nearly 8 years ago, I was elected in at a pay scale of $115,000.
Okay.
And the idea that in just 8 years, someone else is going to be making almost $150,000 for the same job is just unbelievable.
It's double the legislature's pay.
Now, who's on board with you?
Correct.
I think Brendan Riley's on there. Who else is on the list that said they're not going to take the pay increase? Because all of you are up for re-election in February.
I believe that anyone who's running for re-election better not take that pay raise. Because I don't know how you justify that when you're going to your voters saying that, you know, your gas prices, your food prices went up 10%, but I made sure my paycheck went up 10% too.
I know. Well, then,
And the interesting thing, Amy, is that this would be the same rate of inflation used for next year's property tax increases, thanks to Lori Lightfoot and her 50-year automatic property tax increase tied to inflation as well.
So if you guys all turn down this money, how much money are we talking? And then where is the money going to go that was allotted for your raises?
Well, if everyone turned down the raises, that would be a savings of about $600,000 or so in the overall city budget. And I think that doesn't necessarily mean that that money goes anywhere. That's just $600,000 less that we have to ask taxpayers for in the upcoming levy.
Okay. All right, Alderman Lopez, always a pleasure. And for more information about your campaign, where can people go?
Visit RaymondLopezChicago.com. We'll be at the Labor Day Parade this weekend and at Taste of Polonia all 4 days this week. I'm serving beer on Friday. Come visit me.
Hey, but yeah.
I'll give you a text. I got to have you on my show. I got you. I'll give you a text. Got to get you on.
Yeah, and I love
that. I'm not Rod Blagojevich. I'll show up.
Yeah.
And also, too, I loved how you saved that dog. You went into that hot apartment, and that poor thing was chained up on the back porch because I follow you on Twitter. And that was, did they ever find the owner of that dog?
It had no chip. Unfortunately, this is the time of the year when people who don't know what to do with their pets oftentimes just let them loose.
Mm-hmm.
And what I tell and what I would recommend to your listeners, if you don't know what to do, take them to a police station, take them to the animal care, or if you need to, call my office and we'll help facilitate whatever we have to do. Because I'd rather help an animal than have to go find one in an abandoned building like I did that day.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thanks for taking time with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Amy, John, have a great morning.
You too.
Thanks. 15th Ward Alderman and candidate for Mayor Ray Lopez, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
If that's moving up, then I'm moving out.
All right, that music means it's Tuesday, 7:35, our annual confab with Ted Dabrowski, president at wirepoints.com, and they have quite the article out today if you'd like to read it at wirepoints.com. Chicago Public Schools backed video says cops are routinely killing blacks. That's the message that they're sending, but is there any truth to that? Let's welcome back to the program Ted Dabrowski, who joins us on our turnkey.pro answer line. Good morning, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing great, Amy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. So what's this about this new video? Who's producing it? How are kids seeing it? Or are teachers just seeing this?
Well, yeah, I mean, this video is much bigger than this. We wrote about it last week. This author and actor on the CPS website, on the place was called the Equity Tool. You know, she goes on there and talks about how there's nothing else to do but to riot and to loot and to burn because of what's happening. And so it's a real rant, and it's amazing that it's on the CPS website, because, you know, we count on our schools to promote hope, learning, future, not, you know, despair, and that the only thing left to do is to write and loot. And so that's what caught our attention. People should read that article and see that video, because it's fascinating in many ways. But the bigger issue, or the second issue that's there, is that, you know, basically it's the same one, that it's a narrative that's being pushed by so many people, that this extreme amount of killing going on by the police against blacks. And so, you know, Wire points, we like the data, we like the numbers, we like to see what the truth is and get that out there so that you know, extreme discussions don't get extreme, and let's talk about the facts.
And what did you find? How many, you know, how many people were routinely killing blacks? How many cops, I should say?
Well, you know, there's surveys being done, and you know, given the rhetoric that's out there, one survey, you know, found that that people thought 1,000 or more unarmed blacks were killed by the police each year. 1,000 unarmed, that's a huge number. Another survey found that a lot of people thought that it was easier to die in a car accident for a black than to be more likely to be shot by a policeman than to die in a car accident. And there's about 7,500 blacks that die in a car accident each year. So you're talking about massive number of shootings if that were true. And what we found, you know, I'll get to the bottom line. What we found in Chicago is that there's only been, and I say only, so I say only with you know, let me say it in a second, but basically we had one unarmed black shot in 2015, one in 2016, one in 2017, zero in 18, zero in 19, zero in 20, and one in 2021. So, you know, if people are shot, they're typically holding a gun or a knife or something. That's, you know, both whites and blacks across the country. When they're armed, they're likely to get shot by a policeman and likely killed. But, you know, but the number of unarmed who get shot is a much, much smaller number across the country, and certainly in Chicago. I was surprised to see that. I also listened to the extreme messages that are out there, and I thought many more blacks get killed, unarmed blacks get killed, but it's just either one or zero for the last 6 years.
Well, and what are the ramifications of them showing this to people in the community and to possibly children?
Well, first of all, it's, you know, it's still tragic, right? Any shooting of an unarmed person, white, black, Hispanic, is tragic. So, and, you know, nobody condones what, you know, those kind of deaths. And certainly, you know, Chicago's had its history with Burge and others, yeah. Right? There's been a lot of mistakes that cops have made. So, and the police system has made. So we don't condone that. What we're just trying to say is that when you hear the extremes of, you know, it's easier to die being shot by a policeman than in a car accident, it's just not true. And it's not true by a mile. Yeah. And what we need to do is tone down the rhetoric, tone down the extremes, so that we can get back to dialogue about what's the right police responses, you know, what is the right level of policing, what should it look like. But when we're filled with this extremity, it's really hard to do anything.
Yeah. And Ted, one of the things I always hate is when they use percentages to give out those numbers, because when you look at it, they would say, well, blacks are more disproportionately shot than whites. But there's still more white people that get shot and killed
by
police officers than blacks. But they don't hear about it on the news. It doesn't make the news.
Well, yeah. And so that was one of the things for me looking at this was, you know, I wanted to see, you know, if it's truly racist. I was thinking, well, you're only going to see blacks being shot, you know, armed or unarmed,
mm-hmm.
and no whites. But, you know, when you look at the data, so there's a little over 1,000 police shootings in 2020, right. 1,020 to be precise.
Right.
Almost half of those, right. Where the racist identified, half of those are whites. So a lot of white, mostly men, get shot. Most of them are armed. You know, so let's say 459 white men across the country were shot. 433 of them, yeah. Almost all of them, were armed.
Yeah.
26 were unarmed.
Right.
Which is many more than what you have in the black community and the Hispanic community.
Correct. And when you look at the how people used to talk about police and criticize police, a lot of it used to come from the activists. Today, it's coming from the politician. I mean, that alone, in my opinion, hurts the officers out there trying to do their job. Would you agree with that assessment?
Well, yeah, because you know it's all rhetoric, and it's all, you know, it's all fueled to push a political agenda or a racial agenda or something. And yeah, I mean, you can see it right now in everything that's going on. You guys have been talking about it all morning. You know, we don't know how to take control of our city anymore. The bad guys have taken over, whether it's donuts or carjackings or the murders. It's we've lost control of our streets, and it's this kind of rhetoric which ties the hands of police, because everybody thinks that the police are out there shooting blacks and you know, or shooting anybody, to be honest, but shooting blacks in particular. And well, it's just not true. It doesn't mean that there's not a lot that we need to continue to fix, but we got to tone down the rhetoric so we can get back to policing. Look, if you go back and we showed the results of our poll that we did 2 years ago at Wire Points, we polled Chicagoans, and you know, 80% of people, including in the South and West sides, wanted either more or the same level of policing in their neighborhoods. They didn't want less; they wanted the same or more, and that's because they want safe neighborhoods. And you know, that doesn't mean we don't need to improve policing, but it means that they want protection, and they're not getting the protection. Wow. Today.
But you know, unquestionably, Chicago police have had to answer for major abuses and serious unforced errors. You know, when it comes to, you know, John Birch and other bad commanders who, you know, coerce people into making confessions.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of mistakes made, and I think there's a lot of critique that should go towards the police for a lot of the stuff they've done. Certainly in the past, all the John Birch stuff is just, you know, it's just, you know, sad, and any other word you want to use, horrific. And then you've got, of course, the mistaken raid to that, you know, poor lady who is, you know, whatever, exposed there. That was horrible. But it doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, we've gone to the other extreme where we're abusing our cops, we're allowing people to throw rocks and bricks and whatever, and the poor cops have to just stand there and watch it happen. It's a system that won't work. Yeah. And so that's why, you know, I don't know if many people, you know, want to report on the kind of stuff we're reporting on right now, but we feel it's critical to get the facts out, to get the truth out, and then let's have reasonable, logical discussions rather than these emotional, hyperbolic discussions that we seem to be having.
Has CPS or anybody, you know, from Pedro Martinez's team responded to you? Did you reach out to them about, you know, why are you pushing this false narrative?
No, I think if you watch, and this is, you know, right now we're talking about the crime side of it. The other side of it, it was, you know, what the heck is a video like that? And you'll see it's one of the more aggressive videos I've seen. It's got a lot of plays nationally a couple of years ago after George Floyd was murdered. But it is a nihilistic, just a give up on life kind of thing. Go riot, loot, burn message to kids. How the heck that's an equity message? How the heck that's on the Chicago Public Schools website? Why every media is not writing about it, talking about it, pushing them to get that thing off of there? It's not the message for children. It's not a message of hope. It's not a message of learn, you know, learn math, learn reading, learn how to think so you can grow and succeed. No, it's the opposite. It's riot, burn, loot. Yeah, she supports it.
And if we go to wirepoints.com, is there a link to see that, or should we just go to CBS's
website? Yeah, you'll see
website.
That in, you know, in our on our right hand side of our website, or you'll see it on the website. You'll see the video with the piece we're talking about today, but just a couple of days ago we did the other one.
Yeah. Wow! And then John, you need to tell John Anthony what the CTU had to say to you guys.
Uh oh.
They came out with their list of schools and their proficiency in math and readings and the real attendance levels. What'd they say to you, Ted?
Well, they said F Wire Points.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Mike Flaherty on Fox 32 wanted to have them on with us just to talk about the facts. And I think it's very revealing where they are.
Yeah.
The CTU, they don't want to talk facts. And we're back to the same discussion. They don't care about the facts. They don't care about the facts that the schools are empty and the kids are failing, or that they have things on their website that don't belong there, or they're promoting bad narratives. They don't care. And it seems like nobody cares.
I can't believe how many schools are open that have – literally
less than 100 people.
Well, 55 or what? Oh my gosh, the school on Broadway, Uprising, what's it called? Upstart,
I can't. Uplift.
Yeah. There was 55 kids there.
Wow,
yeah, and we played them, we played them every year. And I had no idea they only had 55 kids total. That's freshman through senior, right?
Yeah,
9th through 12.
Yeah, and Amy, then what's interesting is they've got 54 employees, So they've got the same number of employees as students.
Yeah.
Well, and I hope they're assistant. Learning because that sounds like a good deal if you want to, you know, one-on-one.
Yeah. That's
well,
also learning.
You know, the data says they're not, right? Uplift has, I think there was 0% could read a grade level and same thing for math. So it's all the things that could go wrong are going wrong there.
Well, Ted, I appreciate why it points, and here's the reason why. I catch a lot of flack on my show because I talk a lot. I expose a lot of this stuff because, you know, I take a lot of beef from a lot of other black conservatives or somebody that's center right that's black because they feel like, you know, we need to keep this within our own community and talk about it and address it. Well, you're not bringing the true data and information to have these conversations because a lot of people do believe 1,000 black people have been shot and killed. But the more you shine light on these subject matters and people actually start trying to have real conversations about it, then I believe that's when we can start fixing what ails policing in the black community and in Latino communities as well.
And the math doesn't lie.
Math
zero
doesn't lie.
Unarmed black men killed in 2018, 2019, 2020.
Yeah.
One in 2021.
Yeah.
Those are the real facts. But don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. All right, Ted Dabrowski, we're going to have to leave it there for today. He's president at wirepoints.com. You can read the article and see the video if you go to wirepoints.com. Thank you so much, Ted. We'll see you or
talk
to you
next week. Thank you, guys.
Have
a great day. Thanks, Ted. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good Tuesday morning. Amy Jacobson here with John Anthony, who's in for Dan Proft, host of Black and Right Radio.
Yeah.
Heard here Saturdays from 12 to 3 p.m. So glad you could come in.
Thank you. The one and only, John.
Oh, yes. Well, actually,
I know there are a lot.
Classic Drapery, John Anthony.
With John Anthony Vineyards.
Oh, that too.
Good wine, too.
Because every time I text you, I always text a guy from the drapery store, and I'm like, oh, sorry, wrong person. Didn't mean to, so I had to change his phone contact. But this morning, we're learning new information. The Department of Justice, folks, has completed their review of the Trump documents. So is it too late to request a special master, which President Trump is going to be requesting on Thursday? With that and more, let's welcome back to the program John Hinderaker, president of Center of the American Experiment and contributor to Powerline. Good morning, John. How are you?
Hey, great. Glad to be with you, Amy.
Great. So the Department of Justice, you know, they completed their review of the documents. How soon till they leak stuff to the mainstream media?
Well, I'm not sure which review this is, Amy. I actually haven't seen that report yet. I suspect that what we're talking about here is the privilege review. You know, some of the documents that were taken in the raid by the 30 FBI agents on Melania's clothes closet and the basement at Mar-a-Lago, some of those boxes undoubtedly contain some communications between Trump and his lawyers. And the standard thing that is done in this situation is that the documents will first be reviewed by a separate team, the privilege review team at the Department of Justice, that does not include the people who are conducting the substantive investigation. That first review will result in any privileged materials being removed from the box. And the boxes will then be given to the team actually doing the investigation.
And the privilege,
client privilege.
Yeah, the privileged. I'm sorry, we have a bad connection here. But the privileged material, is that attorney-client privilege, or is it documents that Trump deemed as declassified?
Well, no, it wouldn't be ones he deemed declassified. It would be attorney-client privilege, typically. And I don't know whether they've tried to add an overlay of executive privilege here. I'm assuming not. I'm assuming that the privilege that team would be looking for is attorney-client.
Now, here's President Trump. He did speak yesterday about the raid on his home and a possibly pending indictment, which I don't see coming. But a lot of the Democrats think it's coming.
I did nothing wrong. And it's the exact same thing here. We were essentially attacked. We were broken into. They opened up safes. They brought safe crackers in. They brought many, many FBI agents in, all right before the midterms. And all when I have the best poll numbers I've ever had. This is a political attack on our country, and it's a disgrace. And the people understand it. The people understand it. And they could have come in, and they could have talked to us and they could have taken whatever they needed. But instead they raided it. They took my passports. They took things that they should have never taken with that are privileged. And it's a disgrace to our country. It really is. It's just, and it just never ends. It's the same people, the same leaks, the same, they leak to the same places, the same people doing the leaking. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. Our country's a wreck.
So if they had declassified information, why not make that public? Because then it would be over.
Well, the real mystery here in my mind, Amy, is why Trump was holding on to those boxes, right? At the beginning of this year, and by let's just back up for a moment.
Okay.
It has been common and typical for many years for presidents to take boxes of materials with them when they leave the White House. They used to take a lot of material, and they would donate it to their presidential library to give that library some stature, and they would use it, review it, and rely on it to write their memoirs. That was every president did that. And so in 1976 or 78, Congress passed the Presidential Records Act, which says that once he leaves office, the records, the White House records of a president, don't belong to him. They belong to the National Archives, and they are supposed to be left with the National Archives. And it sets up a procedure where the president or his aides can get access to them. And so Trump's not supposed to have presidential records in his house under the Presidential Records Act. Now, there is no penalty of any kind in the Presidential Records Act. It's not a criminal statute. There's not even a civil penalty, nothing. And so in order to carry out a raid with these 30-plus FBI agents, they had to get a search warrant, and the search warrant had to say that they think a crime has been committed and there's probable cause to believe that they'll find evidence relating to this crime if they carry out the search, yeah. Right?
Okay.
So what's the crime? Well, in the affidavit supporting the search warrant, the FBI referred to the two statutes relating to classified information, one of which says that you're not supposed to put it in an unauthorized location. That's what Hillary Clinton did.
Yeah.
And the other says that you're not supposed to give it to an unauthorized person, like, say, a Chinese spy, right? And so that's what's going on here. The Biden administration is claiming that Trump has got classified information in an unauthorized location, namely his own basement. There's no suggestion that I know of, certainly nothing that's been made public, nothing in the affidavit, that gives any reason to think that Trump has shared any information improperly with anybody. And, of course, if he wanted to do that, he could have done it any time in the last 4.5 years.
Yeah, but there's surveillance.
So in my view, this whole thing has the earmarks of a teapot tempest. And to me, the mystery, you know, Trump sent back 15 boxes to the National Archives at the beginning of the year. Why didn't he just send these boxes back too? Why is he holding on to them?
Could they be related to the Russiagate and all that information that which some have leaked out possibly?
You know, people have speculated. People have been speculating for a long time, for years, that Trump could get control over documents that would really tell us the whole Russiagate story. And people have been saying he should declassify them, make them public. This goes back for years. And in my view, if he was going to do that, he could have done it a long time ago. So that's speculation. But again, yeah. I don't know of anything that would indicate that that's the case.
But they were working with NARA. They were working with them. They could have done a subpoena. Now, do we really believe the 30 million documents that are here in Chicago from Barack Obama's presidency? You think they went through all 30 million documents?
No, they're
which supposed to digitize.
But they're in a secure location, which they mutually agreed upon.
Yeah.
But he did tell them that he was going to digitize those documents and give them to National Archives, and he has yet to do that.
Yeah.
So why are there different rules for different people?
Well, I think we all know, Amy, that there are different rules for Donald Trump, right? I mean, I see it's possible. Let me just back up and acknowledge it is possible that there is something important going on here. It's possible.
Okay.
But we haven't seen any evidence of that. We certainly don't see evidence of it in the affidavit. You know, and I think what's going on is that it's just part of the vendetta
against Donald Trump and the Biden administration, and Merrick Garland and the Department of Justice, the leadership of the FBI, they've been trying to destroy Donald Trump for what, 6.5 years now? And all the signs certainly are pointing in the direction that that's what's going on.
Now, you wrote an article at powerlineblog.com. Did the FBI rig the 2020 election? And right now, the people have little faith in the FBI. So can you explain how this is possible?
Oh, man, I got to go back and find my piece. I write so much stuff, Amy, as you know.
Well, you talked about the interview with Mark Zuckerberg with Joe Rogan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. This is a great example. Yeah, yeah. So this made a lot of news. Mark Zuckerberg is on the Joe Rogan podcast, and Rogan starts asking about the Hunter Biden laptop and the suppression of that story. And Zuckerberg tells this story. And the story he tells is really interesting. He says that right before the laptop thing came out, the FBI came to Facebook, and they obviously also came to Twitter. And they said, oh, we have information that Russian disinformation is about to be released. We always hear about Russian disinformation. I'd like to see some sometime. I don't know. But the FBI says Russian disinformation is about to be released. Watch for it. And apparently, and this wasn't Zuckerberg. I mean, the FBI didn't come to him. They came to some other folks at Facebook. And apparently, shortly after, the laptop story broke in the New York Post, and both Facebook employees and Twitter employees immediately jumped to the conclusion that this was the Russian disinformation.
Oh.
And of course, Joe Rogan is an interviewer, not a cross-examiner, right? And so you just long to be in his shoes and to ask some follow-up questions. Because one thing that is not clear is what exactly did the FBI say? Did they just say generically that they think there's going to be some Russian disinformation, like they say there was in 2016, or did they flag the laptop story and say, watch out for this, it's Russian disinformation? What Zuckerberg said, and of course he didn't have the conversation, but he said his memory was kind of vague, but he didn't think they said the laptop specifically, but rather the laptop fit the pattern.
Yeah, what's this pattern? That means it's happened
before. What's the pattern?
Before.
Right, exactly. So if I was Joe Rogan, I'd say, pattern? What pattern? What are you talking about, right? The pattern is it's information that hurts the Democrats. That's the pattern. Yeah.
Well, if this information was revealed, do you think it would have affected the 2020 election?
Well, you know, there's amazing poll day. I'm sure you've seen it. In fact, there's another one that just came out recently. Large numbers of people say that if they had known about the corruption of the Biden family, and as I've said over and over, Amy, nobody has ever bribed Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden is a train wreck. You don't write him $1 million checks. Right?
I would never give
the guy
drug
in the
addict.
Family that's worth bribing. Obviously, was Vice President Joe.
Yeah, they wanted access to him.
Yeah, of course.
The big guy.
Of course. He's the target. I mean, nobody cares about Hunter. So poll data have just to an amazing degree shown that people say if they'd known about this, they wouldn't have voted for Biden. And I saw in just a couple of days ago, I think something like 79% said that they think if this information had come out, it would have swung the election to Trump. So you know, one of the problems we have in this country, Amy, is that, and John, is that Congress can't conduct competent investigations. You know, it's just rare for a congressional investigation ever really to get to the bottom of anything. They pussyfoot around. They don't demand access to all the records. You know, somebody hands them 12 pieces of paper and says, "Oh, here, we choose to give you this." They subpoena people. And they don't bother to show up. I mean, so it's possible that when the Republicans take the House in November, they'll probably investigate this.
Yeah.
Possible that they'll get to the bottom of it, but I don't know. We'll see.
John, I think when you look at it, 2015, we got them. 2016, we got them. 2017, we got them. 2018, we got them. 2019, oh, we got them. 2020, we got them. 2021, we got them. 2022, oh, we definitely got them. You see the pattern, and I think to the American electorate, they're looking at this. And it's like Chicken Little, the sky is falling, the sky is, so the boy that cried wolf, and things of that nature. And nothing has come of anything that they've ever done. Peter Strzok, getting the FISA warrant. All these things, Americans are watching this, and they're fed up. And I'm afraid of what's going to happen should Trump be indicted. I don't think he will. At least I hope not. But what happens should he be indicted?
Well, John, that's a great question. I think he could be indicted for storing classified materials in an unauthorized location, namely his own basement. And it's kind of nuts in a way. He's entitled to read them. He's entitled to know the information. You know, he was the president. Nevertheless, I think that indictment is possible. And the danger, in my opinion, is that the indictment would be venued in Washington, D.C. And if they prosecute him, that jury will consist of 12 rabid Democrats, and probably 12 rabid anti-Trumpers.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a real risk if that trial takes place in Washington, D.C., he could get convicted of something that Hillary Clinton unquestionably did. And in fact, let me just quickly make the point.
The president Clinton. Yeah. Socks in the drawer.
Let me just quickly make the point that what Hillary was doing was a million times worse. She was conducting official business as the Secretary of State using an illegal off-the-books server in her own house that easily could have been penetrated by the Russians or the Chinese, and probably was. Trump just has these old boxes sitting in his basement, and there's no suggestion of the affidavit that the Russians or the Chinese are sneaking into his basement.
And they waited 18 months.
But there's surveillance camera on that basement at all times. That's when we had Andrew McCarthy on. He said that's thing, you know, and something happened between June and August that made them
the election.
Well, no, between this past June and this August that made them, move in on his property. And we don't know who the mole is. I bet it's a Secret Service agent or who knows. Yeah. But it's just fascinating to me. And if he gets indicted, oh, dear Lord, there's going to be riots. Oh, my God. I think that there's going to be a little bit of pushback, don't you?
There's going to be a huge pushback if he gets indicted. But we have seen no sign of self-control on the part of the Democratic Party here, have we? I mean, have they ever, has their better judgment ever come into play when they're going after Donald Trump?
No.
It would be a first, right? I mean, so I think we could be cruising toward a situation where they dummy up an indictment. They say, we found, 300 pages. And by the way, there are so many classified documents or documents that are stamped confidential, secret, top secret. I doubt that you could put together 15 boxes from the White House that didn't contain documents stamped classified, There's rampant classification of documents in the executive branch. And so I think it's a real serious question. Are they going to go to a grand jury and procure an indictment simply based on the fact that there's some classified information in those boxes and try Trump in Washington, D.C.? I mean, that is and you're right, Amy. It's very hard to foresee the consequences if they do that.
And remember, everything they said Trump was, this Biden White House and DOJ is. Trump could have easily have done the same thing to Joe Biden when he was running about the laptop, the big guy, the payments, the bribery with Ukraine.
The 10%.
But he held back. But they're doing the exact same thing that they accused Trump of doing. And that's where I think the American people are going to be flustered with this.
All right. John Hinderaker, president of Center of the American Experiment and contributor to Powerline. You could read his column at powerlineblog.com. John, always a pleasure, and thank you so much for taking time out to be with us this morning.
Great to be with you, Amy.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Street takeovers, that's what happened in Chicago Friday night into Saturday, Saturday night into Sunday. We had some drifting going on, let's just say that. And it wasn't just at one intersection. Chicago police told me yesterday that they went from district to district, that they knew that they were coming. So they kept going. And it's not just one or two cars.
Yeah.
There's hundreds. And I didn't see it until I watched Channel 7 last night because I'm a local news nerd. And they did. They panned over and you could see all these cars lined up to either participate or observing it. So why not impound all of those cars? Yeah. Right now, so far, they've arrested 9 people. 7 vehicles have been impounded, but they have identified 22 others that they said they're going to come and get you.
Yeah.
They know who you are. They know where you live. And when you least expect it, you know, it's like the impound man. What was that movie called? The guy who drove around in the middle of the night and impounded cars. The Repo Man.
Repo Man.
Yeah. Like the Repo Man. They're coming to get you. Yeah. But this weekend, they're going to start with this new, it's called the Caravan Task Force. We're going to be using salt trucks, garbage trucks, anything to put in the intersection to stop them. But will it work?
About the salt trucks and the larger vehicles to block the locations where our drifters are choosing are more porous than maybe some of the other locations in other cities. So we have an increasingly large challenge. It's hard to just block off the area where they are and then have them blocked in because there's so many exits. There's so much ingress and egress that we can't, that won't be successful. So we have to be a little bit more strategic maybe than some other cities who can easily block in. It's much more difficult to block in. I could just tell you what to stop next week's if your car is towed. Okay. You got to pay $10,000 to get it out. That's what's going to stop next week and the next weeks. More cars towed. I'm not opposed to raising it from 10,000 to 20,000 if it continues. Let's keep going until these knuckleheads get the message.
Did City of Chicago pay, create a law to raise it up to 10,000?
They
that
did.
What it was?
City Council last month put in a new ordinance that if you're caught drifting or drag racing, they'll impound your car and there's a $10,000 fine.
Okay.
But so they have this implement this new program, which is big press conference. And then they're saying it might not work. Another police chief, Brian McDermott, said that they're going to be using in this the Caravan Task Force. They're going to have shields with them and body armor because this is what it was like, folks, when people attacked police officers. They destroyed, but heavily damaged 6 police cars on early Sunday morning, throwing rocks, bricks, fireworks, and then some dude uprooted a tree. You've got to see. Did you see it?
I didn't see that part. I got to look it up.
Got a tree, and he's holding a tree, and he's whipping it at a police car. They're screaming at him, too. They're screaming, like, you hit him. You get that side. I mean, it is absolute chaos.
I'm watching it now.
So is this the plan? Is this a good plan of attack? With that, let's welcome back to our program former Chicago Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy, who joins us on our Turnkey DepPro answer line. Good morning, Mr. McCarthy. How are you?
Good morning, Amy. I'm good. Disgusted like everybody else with what's happening in Chicago, but I'm okay.
So you see the chaos that's going on, and, you know, you have 200 people there, you have 200-plus cars, or, you know, people that are in on this, want to get their viral moment on social media. Should they be arrested, the spectators be arrested as well as those that are actually drifting?
I would say probably, because they're blocking traffic. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I want to point out is what we hear out of this administration constantly is how they're dedicating resources, right? Mm-hmm. The phrase increasing patrols we hear all the time. That's nonsense, increasing patrols. What does that mean? I mean, honestly, you could put all the resources that you can imagine on the street, but if you don't have a plan, and if you don't have supervision, and if you don't have the proper training and backing to do your job, it's just not going to work. So, you know, look at what's happening with the amount of time that the officers are working. Apparently, they can't even track how long these officers have been working. Way back in May, I spoke to a sergeant in CPD, and he told me that he was on day 39 without a day off. So it's mayhem, like you just described, Amy, and there's no relief in sight.
And during the weekend, an officer almost got killed at the intersection of Columbus and Wacker trying to stop, to break up these drifting scenes. And they're also drag racing, and this very accomplished woman, Shaman Mercies, was visiting from Naples, Florida, going to dinner, and she gets hit by a Corvette because they were speeding there, drag racing on Cicero Avenue, and her boyfriend actually pulled the driver out of the car and said, "You killed my girlfriend." Like, he grabbed him and held him until police came. But what's going to be the final breaking point where they just realize that we have a lack of officers and then the lack of respect for police as well. And that combination is lethal.
Well, again, no, I'm going to throw in there a lack of a plan. We don't see a plan, quite frankly. We don't see a plan. And, you know, that's pretty much one of my strong points. As you know, I ran New York's crime strategy for 7 years, very successful for 5 years in Newark. And we had gotten the murder rate down to breaking 400 going south, when last year we broke 800 going north. That's a 100% increase. So it's not just about those other things. And by the way, it's everything. And the breaking point should have already come. And it should be reflected in the next election.
Yeah. And
you know, one of the things, I'll try and do this quickly. One of the things that I really want to point out is that when Laurie was campaigning for mayor, she talked about a safety gap. And she talked about a safety gap in her plans. And if you go back and look at the initial plans that came out of City Hall regarding public safety, they wanted to eliminate the safety gap. And what they were talking about is the fact that people who live in West Lawndale or people who live in Englewood should have the same sense of safety as the people who live on the Mac Mile or Lincoln Park. They have eliminated the safety gap. The problem is, I want somebody, and please, please, somebody, take a look at the victimologies. Because back when I was superintendent, it was about 85% of our murder victims were African American. Well, I'm willing to bet that that's still the case today.
Yeah, it is.
Same number. Shot in different places.
Pretty much same number. You're spot on, sir.
So what? So they have this new caravan task force, which they're going to bring out salt trucks and garbage trucks to try and stop them. These drifters. Is that a good plan? Because I don't know, seeing the video that I saw, I don't know how logistically they're going to get them in there unless they proactively get them there before the drifting starts.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to happen either. You know, I have a very simple way to handle this, which goes back to something that we learned in New York City during one of the national conventions. I think it was the Democratic National Convention in 2000. You have to shut off the streets behind it.
Amen.
And then just capture the fish that are in there.
God, that's
because
in the fishbowl.
Otherwise, you can't get to it. But if you shut off the streets behind them, they're trapped.
Yeah.
If you shut off all four access points, they can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
But that means that you have to be prepared to make mass arrests at the same time. That will stop this. But that's not going to happen, I guarantee you.
Why don't they want to make mass arrests?
I can't answer that question. Because, but you know what, Amy? Two months ago, I was on the news, and they wanted to talk about the pursuit policy and how the pursuit policy was impacting what was happening. And if you remember the video, that horrible video of that young man who's a chef who got shot in Lincoln Park during a robbery, the police had that vehicle at the campus, museum campus. And they went to pull it over, and the car took off, and they didn't pursue the car.
Wow.
They just got on the radio, and they said, we're going into the station to do an eluding report. And the complaint from the newscaster was that the pursuit policy was way too restrictive, way too complicated. And I had to explain that these officers are in the mode of self-preservation.
Yep.
You get involved, you get in trouble. And guess what? I got off the air, and 15 minutes later was when they shot the 13-year-old out of the stolen car without a gun in the gas station. Okay. 15 minutes later.
Wow. And that could have been prevented.
These officers don't want to work.
Yep.
Well, no. What I'm saying is, if those officers who chased the kid out of the car were doing their job.
Yeah,
right.
And the unfortunate circumstance was that he shot the kid. He's probably going to at least lose his job, if not go to jail. And the question becomes, what's the motivation to do your job?
Exactly. Gary, you know, we did a lot of good work when I was a legislator down in Springfield. And we beat back a lot of this cop nonsense. I fear, you said it hasn't hit the fan yet, or it hasn't hit the bottom yet. I fear January 1, 2023, when the Safety Act fully gets implemented, cash bail, I think we're going to see, I think we're going to see the summer of 2020 riots on steroids. What are your thoughts?
I agree wholeheartedly. And there's no accountability. You know, on the very day that Pritzker signed the bill saying that the police could not interview adolescents who are under arrest, the lead story in the news was the fact that it was 15-year-olds who were doing all the carjacking.
Yep.
So for years, I've been talking about the fact that we're emboldening criminals and hamstringing the police. Well, what did you think was going to happen? We have now created lawlessness. And I don't know what the goal is, but that's where we are. And then the other thing is, people want to talk about building trust with the police. You can't build trust until you have legitimacy.
Amen.
And the police and government in the city of Chicago do not have legitimacy. They have politics. Politics is not performance. That's what we're seeing in the end.
Now, have you thought about running for mayor again?
Amy, I would rather nail myself to a burning tree, quite frankly.
It was so I'm going to take that as a no.
Yeah, but you know what? It's not that I don't want to do that job. It's that, I'm sorry, if it's just about raising money and calling people and asking them for money, that's not me.
Yeah, I know. I hate doing that.
My parents were the greatest generation that went through the Depression and World War II, and the values that I have has it that you don't ask for something, you go out and you earn it.
Yep.
And
amen.
I'm sorry, it just doesn't work for me.
Yep.
I'd love to help out. I'm trying to figure out who I like as a mayoral candidate that I can, you know, maybe help or maybe hurt, depending on if I get behind them.
Right.
You know? Because you never know how this works. My wife went to a school board meeting in Park Ridge 2 weeks ago, and she got screamed at.
Why?
With somebody who said that I killed Laquan McDonald and you're married to me.
Wow.
What type of a culture are we living in?
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. And I know your wife, fellow Hawkeye. What was her response?
Oh, yeah. She's
a firecracker, man. What was her response? Did she just walk out?
She also has an elegant side where, you know, don't forget she's a trial lawyer.
She gets up in front of Gary and has to talk.
No, Gary's a linebacker, Irish, and a Taurus, right? So there's only one way for me to go, and it's straight ahead.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. Well, always a pleasure having you on, Gary MacArthur. Are you still the interim police chief in Willow Springs?
Yes, I am, but this Thursday we have a village meeting, and they're going to present a motion that I become the permanent chief.
Oh.
Because, quite frankly, it's a very good relationship. It's a wonderful community. I'm very happy to be there, and apparently they're happy to have me.
Good for you.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
And the safety act will affect you, too, even small towns.
Oh, absolutely
every time.
It will. Yeah, without a doubt. I'm already dealing with it with some discipline issues, trying to navigate it, and it's so confusing all at the same time. But I'm going to stay in the game, and I can still talk about what we should be doing, and I will continue to do that.
Good for you. All right, Gary MacArthur, always a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much for your time, and have a good day. Thank you. Interim Police Chief in Willow Springs and the former superintendent of Chicago Police Department. He joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.